back with another episode of Bed Talks with Kay, and we have a really special guest today. Her name is Anita Rowe. She's coming to us from NPR. I know some of you out there listen to that little station.
And we watch
that little station. Lots of us do. Just a little bit about Anita that I found interesting and very relatable right away is that she has some Midwestern roots, like myself. I'm from Chicago. She has some Iowa roots, and she also grew up in Northwest England. So I feel like she's been in different parts of the country already, and now she's in the South, right? She also is a managing editor of The State of Things, and she's the host of a podcast, which is really an amazing podcast called Embodied. Welcome to the show, Anita.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so I listened to your Embodied podcast, and I just found it to be so interesting for like so many different reasons, which we'll get into on the show. But the thing I didn't tell people right away, that Embodied is a podcast about sex and relationships and intimacy, and you kind of delve into very taboo topics in the Bible Belt area of the country, which I'm sure people have really strong responses to that initially. But I'm just curious about, like, how did you decide to, like, just get into this endeavor of going into such a taboo topic and starting the podcast?
Yeah. So I went to school at UNC Chapel Hill, and then I moved to New York City for a little while, and then I've been back in the South since 2014. And I've been working in public radio this whole time, and I feel like I've been able to kind of get the pulse of the kinds of conversations people are having in public spaces, in the media, and then in private. And I started to notice like a huge disconnect, especially in public radio, that I felt like there were a few things that were really off limits that people were not really talking about openly in public radio. And those were kind of the topics that I ended up merging into the podcast, sex and relationships primarily, and then some health topics that kind of fall into the sex and relationship category. So I got the opportunity to host in the summer of starting in 2017, but really regularly in 2019. And the idea for Embodied really started as an experiment of, you know, what would happen if I gave myself permission to have conversations about topics that interest me, that I know people are interested in and talking about, but that I just haven't heard talked about on public radio in this more kind of open space. And it was super interesting that the kind of reaction and response we got to the show that I launched it on is a live daily show that airs at noon. And some of the most intense and critical feedback we've gotten is that you shouldn't be talking about sex on the radio at noon, which I found to be really funny and very distinctly Southern, the idea that, you know, there's a time and a place for talking about sex, and it's certainly not in the daylight, and it's certainly not out in public. So that was definitely the biggest kind of blowback that we got to at the beginning. But over time, I feel like what people have noticed is that, you know, I'm not talking about sex to be salacious. I'm not trying to be provocative. I'm trying to normalize this topic, and I'm trying to normalize like aspects of sex and sexuality, which I think it takes a while for people to kind of believe that that's actually your intention, because we're all kind of trained to think, you know, sex sells, and like, of course people are doing it to get a lot of attention. I think it took a while for people to kind of see what my real intentions were through the kinds of topics that we were talking about. So it's been a journey to kind of build the audience and to build trust, I think, between me and people who are listening, so people understand like why I'm trying to have these conversations. But I think it's also been really empowering for people to realize that I think what people really need to hear around so much of this stuff is like, you are normal, you're not alone, and like, it makes you feel less alone to talk about it in public than it does to, you know, just like Google by yourself in your bedroom. So it's been a good just like shining light on things that I think everyone is thinking about and maybe worried about at times, but needs space to process more openly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's a couple of things, like you said, I mean, with relationships, with sex, with marriage, with parenting, there's a lot of things you just don't know to that point of having that experience. And I think what your show does is just try to shine light on these things that are happening. And I was listening to your last podcast where you interviewed people over 50 talking about sex and how they see it and how they see dating, how women see menopause. And when you did the show, you said something like, I didn't think people would, or I think the lady that you interviewed who had a podcast specifically where she targets women over 50 and how they're having relationships and dating and finding partners, she didn't think women would be enthusiastic to talk about menopause and all the things that happen to your body physically, but then also the process of finding someone. And there were lots of women that were super enthusiastic to talk about it, because sometimes until you're in that bucket of having that experience, you just don't know. So people are Googling, but they really do, they may feel some shame of like actually having that conversation. So I thought it was kind of cool that even your parents were on there, who I could tell have been married for a while, and they were giving even their insights of being married and how your mom felt when she went through menopause, and she was sharing her experience and your dad was sharing his perspective. I thought that was really neat, because I'm sure there's a lot of couples that sit and have that same experience that could like really relate to it. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was waiting for her to respond.
I mean, and it's been a really cool experience for me getting to know my parents better through the show. I grew up, so my dad is from India, an Indian immigrant. My mom was raised in England in a pretty conservative Catholic family. And me and my siblings were raised in the U.S., but in a pretty, like, culturally immigrant household. My dad is, like, it was really important to him to instill Indian values, Hinduism, and really raise us to kind of understand his family background. And I think with some of that came less openness around definitely talking about sex. And my parents never gave me the sex talk at all. So it's been kind of like...
At all?
Interesting.
At all?
At all.
Okay, hold on, Anita. Hold on now. Now, hold on. All right, this is where I just shattered the status quo and everything else that's associated. Okay, when you say at all, one rule of thumb is, I know as a child, I was introduced to some things verbally as well as visually that helped to prepare me in some way, shape, form when I was able to fly on my own, per se. How did you weather this storm of not knowing any particulars in reference to sex? I mean, come on, let's talk.
I mean, so you get it through school, right? And through your friends and through socializing. So I think also for me, I mean, growing up with pretty strict parents, I think I did a lot of my exploring and like processing through friends, definitely more so than with my parents. So I think it was just kind of like, you know, I was on my journey, I was exposed, I was learning things, I was watching movies, they just didn't know about it.
and you know, I like what you said, because even though I put the emphasis on what your parents didn't, what? Yes, you're right. We normally get certain levels of learning via friends, associates. But my whole point was, normally it's our parents who kind of introduce that particular topic to us, so that we won't go in this thing totally influenced by friends, because we know when friends start to influence us or teach us, it sometimes can lead down another road.
It completely. And that's kind of what my parents, I mean, through, I asked them in one of the episodes, like, why did you guys not give us the sex talk at all? And they were very honest. They were like, we actually really regret it now. Like, we think it was a big mistake. And like, it came from our own like fear and discomfort about having this conversation. But we realize, you know, any opportunity you have to like open up a relationship where like your kid can come to you later if there's a problem or there's a concern, like you don't even open that door if you never talk about it at all. So, yeah, it's been super interesting to, like, explore this and then have them on and be, like, kind of going through my own history with them and learning from them and, like, finally talking about things. Now I'm in my 30s, and it's like, oh, now we're finally, like...
now we're having a conversation. See, I could totally relate because I feel like my parents were very conservative, too, and it was kind of like, don't have sex. This is all the bad things that can happen with sex, because they want to protect you, because when you're young, you're not always making the right decisions, right, when it comes to having sex. And I got that. But then I had an older sister, and she was like, look, your sex is great. You're going to like it. It's a beautiful thing, but there's context around it. Mm-hmm. And having both of those views kind of helped, because there was like the reality side of these are all the things that can happen. And then there was the other side, like, oh, this might be a good thing, which scared me too. Cause I was like, what if it's too much of a good thing and all the things happen that my parents talked about? So I like what you're saying, which leads me to my next question. Why do you think people fear this subject, or they feel like it's so taboo? And I like what you said, because you're right. I think when people hear sex, they immediately think certain things go in their mind, right? Porn, or like transgender, or homosexuality, or fornication, or like, I think people go to wherever their mind has been built around it based on like how they've grown up. So what have you noticed from like listening to your viewers, interviewing people? What do you feel like is the reason they find this subject is like so taboo?
I think that there's a ton of shame. Like, I think that we are raised in a way that makes us feel shameful about so many aspects of our bodies and feel shameful about having desire and feel shameful about the kind of desire that we have. And so then you just start, like, I feel like everything is viewed from that lens when you're constantly like, is this thing that I'm feeling or thinking or that I'm attracted to, like, I think that's not supposed to be okay. And so I feel some shame. And so anyone bringing it up just, like, starts that shame spiral. And a lot of, like, for me, I mean, I think when we talk about kind of being a good blank, like, I feel like that's what's come up a lot in this show is people feeling like, you know, am I a good, if you're religious, like, am I a good Christian if I have these desires or if I watch porn or if I do this? Like, am I a good daughter? Am I a good feminist? Like, do I not value women if I have these? And so I think there's so much that's kind of, like, locked. Like, we lock ourselves into these particular ideas of, like, what's okay because there's so much shame around it. I think that's been one of the biggest eye-opening things about doing the show for me is how many people kind of tell themselves a particular story really early on and just kind of, like, get really stuck in that view of thinking about themselves. And even though they might be doing certain behaviors or watching certain things, they feel so much shame about it and they don't want to talk about it because they just want to do it in private.
And you know, you touched on something, Anita, when you said that, yes, there is a lot of shame. But let's go back thousands of years ago. In the Garden of Eden, okay, you seem very versed across the board. In the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve bit the, you know, ate of the apple, all right, there was a level of shame involved because now the revelation of their nakedness was exposed. I think that has still followed us all these generations, these thousands of years later. Now, there's a rule of thumb. If God made it, then it is for us. Let me say that again. So if God made sex, why is it that we are ashamed? Well, if it's within the context of my opinion, your marriage, so forth, it's to be enjoyed. But there's still a level of shame, even in marriage. And that's something that I've always questioned in my past with people that I may have been involved with. And I'm like, you know, the good book says that the bedroom is undefiled. So what that means is you enjoy one another to the best of your abilities. There's no limits. But yet I would find that there was still a level of shame. And this is within the context of matrimony. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think it's like, it depends on what people are bringing into the bedroom, I guess. I think for women, some of the shame can come from, you know, concerns about your body or concerns about, like, owning your pleasure and owning kind of what you want sex to be. I think that's also the thing is, like, it's like, do we all universally believe that sex for pleasure and sex that is equally pleasurable to both people is the end goal? Like, hopefully, but not necessarily. And I think there's so much communication that has to happen for that to happen. So even if we may intellectually agree that, like, within the context of marriage, if that's how people feel, like, it's okay, there's so much holding us back from, like, being open about having the conversation even once we're in that space that we don't even begin. And I mean, I guess for me, like, what I think is interesting about you all, you know, the frame of, like, bed talks is, like, I have heard for a long time, like, the best place to have conversations about your relationship or about your sex life is, like, actually away from the bed. Like, don't try to, like, really debrief what's not going well or, like, your dynamics or your want for pleasure with the other person isn't doing it right in bed because it's so charged. So it's actually better to, like, have those conversations somewhere else. And so I think that's kind of why, like, it requires a both and. Like, if you're locked in your idea to talk about sex outside the bedroom, and when you get inside the bedroom, you're bringing all of that shame with you. Like, it's not, it all is continuous. You're still the same person. And you can't just, like, put that part of you aside.
Well, I tend to disagree, and I hear what you're saying, that, yes, I think some, again, this is what makes the world go round. You know, some people do find that their best conversations, whether it's related to sexuality within the bed, okay, I understand what you're saying, but it's a level of comfort that still comes with that to where it's almost like your guards are down. You know, whether you just finished with a sexual act with your mate and, you know, all those positive feelings, you know, entrench your mind. You think now you're saying, it, oh, man, you know, you really didn't do that the way I wanted, but I still love you. You know, everything is relaxed. You understand? But right. The reason that I wanted to ask you that, Anita, was to see your what was your perspective, because that is something that I've always wondered about for years. When you're within the context of a particular union, there's still a level of shame. And so I went back thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, to where that shame first started, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like with couples even, I coach men and women. And men sometimes tend to compartmentalize their wives. Mm. And I've had conversations where they're like, she probably wouldn't like this, or I can't explore in this way with my wife. And my thing is like, are you asking the question? Because she may be on the other end also having the same feelings that I can't explore this way with my husband. And I think a lot of that does come from maybe how we're raised or how there's a shame around expressing these feelings or beliefs. And I think that's actually what leads to couples.
Open to discussion, in other
right?
words.
Couples having issues. You know. Right, because I feel like if you can't have that conversation or you can't get that within that relationship, that's when people start looking outside the relationship. And sometimes on the brink of that, all of that disruption to the relationship, they find out they could have had a lot of what they really wanted within the context of the relationship, but they just weren't uncomfortable having the conversation. So that's why I think your show is like super important. So personally, I have a question: has your show changed the way that you like date? Approach intimacy, or the way you like choose your partners now? Like if you're talking to someone and they just are totally closed to having these type of conversations, are you immediately like, oh, I don't know if this is gonna work, because I need someone that could be more communicative about these things?
It's interesting. So I am in a relationship. I've been with my same partner for 4 years now. And doing this show has been, I think, it's been really interesting to, like, hear his reflections on it, in that, like, intellectually, I've noticed that there's still, like, there's some divide for me where, like, I can have all of these intellectual conversations, but I still, and they like, illuminate for me the things that I need to work on, but it's not, like, a one-to-one. I'm like, oh, great, like, I'm totally comfortable talking about all this stuff, and therefore, like, I feel totally comfortable. The episode, so one of the women that we interviewed, her name is Emily Nagoski, and she's like a sex educator, and she wrote this book called Come As You Are, which is all about kind of normalizing female pleasure and like understanding the difference between different kinds of sex drive and all of that. And I think that for me was the biggest like crossover that I saw between like exploring this and my real personal life, because she talks a lot about this idea of the accelerator and the brake, which is that like some people can have like spontaneous desire, they get aroused and they like want to have a sexual act. For other people, it's this like accelerator and brake. So like there are things that really turn you on and things that really turn you off, and you need to know what people's like turn ons are and turn offs are, and like balance those two. And I think learning that and talking about that in my relationship has been so helpful, because it makes you realize like It's about everything that's going on around the context of your intimate relationship as well. Like you can't just, or at least for me, like it depends on the person, but I can't go from like a really stressful day at work and having all of these like expectations and things people need from me to like feeling super sexy. Like that's not gonna happen.
and so I like what she said.
I think there's been like a lot of like really helpful frameworks and like things that I've learned through doing the show that I've been like, oh, thank God, like this is like allows me to have a better way of understanding like what's going on for me personally.
I like that. I like the comparison she made to accelerator and brake. Well, I've been using this for a long time, and this is just for the laymans out there, hot and cold. There are some things that get you hot, you know, sexually, and some things that get you cold. But I just love the comparisons, because that is true. And I think, as Elizabeth said, you know, when you know your partner, you know the things that may turn her on, turn her off intellectually, because it's not always about, you know, the sexual exploration, but intellectually, I think that's something we, you know, as a unit, as a couple, you take into consideration, because that can then lead to, of course, you know, those sexual loving acts that in which both parties are pleased.
I think you're getting him going, Hold Anita. On. I might have a little monster on my hand after after the show is over. But No, I like what she's saying, because I think about that book, The Love Languages, and even the way people like love to be expressed to them. It's really interesting. You know, your partner may like to receive love through affection or through intimacy or through time, but then you may have another person that is turned on just because you're cleaning the house. Like, it's very, I mean, humans are very interesting. So I can see how on the intimacy front too, that people have different needs. And if you don't talk about those needs and there's not transparency, I can see how that rift can grow. And the couple could easily get disconnected. So that's pretty interesting.
So, Anita, what philosophy have you brought to your radio show that has totally went against the grain? Now, let me kind of explain what I'm asking. Okay, when you have a certain philosophy, it doesn't matter if you're in a room of 100 people, if you're in a room of 10 people. You stick to that philosophy, and a lot of times you're able to sway the masses because your philosophy makes concrete sense. You're able to provide details or examples. So I'm curious, was there a different philosophy that you bring or brought or that you even bring to your radio show?
I think the thing that occurs to me first when you say that is the idea. It's not my original idea, but the principle that like the personal is political. So the things that are happening to each of us in our own individual lives are all connected to a bigger system, a system of how the world works, how things operate, how structures operate, and that like being able to see that connection is really important. So I think that's always what I'm trying to do as an interviewer, is to like tease out the particulars of someone's personal story, but also connect them to something bigger, and to like keep that context always in mind, to not get too lost in someone's personal details, but also not get too heady, and find a way to like keep people like seeing themselves in a bigger context all the time. That's probably the thing that is,
yeah,
my,
I was gonna say that, like, she's much broader than her podcast Embodied. Like, I mean, she writes and interviews, and you read some of her, you mm-hmm. were talking about some of her work. She talks to people who are trying to change things in the community in different ways. So, you know, politically, community activists, people who are creating legacy through doing different things with their skill set, but looking at using their skill set in a way that helps others. And I see that pattern in what you're doing, that you're very drawn to people who are creating change in
totally.
Their environment.
Yeah.
I noticed there was a connectiveness there. And so I can see how you tie it all together. And then when you're doing your Embodied show, you're like pulling from probably some of those experiences of interacting with those other people, and pulling that into those, you know, that thought process of how you're thinking about pulling information out of people when you talk about these different taboo topics. So I found that
totally.
Like your show, it was, I mean, Anita's not paying me to say this to the audience, but like her show is just very, I love the flow of it. Like, you start with your story, and then you bring in someone to kind of reiterate the story and give their personal examples. And then I like how your parents come in on some of the segments. I thought that was pretty cool. So I'm sure how did your parents, I mean, coming from such a conservative, you know, because I know like Asian culture is typically more conservative about these things. So how did your parents, when you first told them you were doing this show, how did they react to that? I know they're on board now, it sounds like, but how did they initially
react?
Yeah,
I think, so I was a women's studies major in college, and I think that they kind of, there was a point at which they were like, okay, like, she is on her own political journey, her own awakening journey, and I think they always were just like, this is her journey over here, like, we're appreciative of it, we admire what she's doing, but didn't necessarily see it connecting back to like the family unit. And so I think this was the first time that I kind of like brought it full circle and was like, okay, I have been on this journey. Here are my things, here are my beliefs. And like, now I want to look at it with you guys. And it's been, I think it's been, they've been really open to it because I think they feel like it's a way to get to know me better. It's like both of us feel like, you know, there's a lot about each of us that we don't know. And I think when I first, like the beginning of my journey through women's studies, like I had a lot of judgment, I think, about like the way that they do things, like the fact that they're in a more traditional relationship, the fact that they raised me in a more traditional way, and my judgment kind of prevented me from, I feel like I kind of like shut down a little bit with like, okay, like this is you, this is me, we're different. And this has allowed me to kind of release some of my judgment, have a little bit more curiosity about why they did things the way that they did, because I don't feel like threatened by how they do things anymore, because I'm old enough that I'm like, it doesn't control my life. Like, I can make my own different decisions.
And plus,
so
I think
I feel
you,
like for both of us, it's been, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think also because you're interviewing different people too and listening to things from different perspectives, the more I think you listen to other people's perspectives and you gain an understanding of like where they're coming from, you don't feel threatened by it because you're like, that might be for them, but that's not for me. But okay, now I kind of have an understanding of why they may be doing that particular thing in that particular way. So I understand that because my parents, my mom just passed away recently, but my mom and dad were married like 57 years. And I remember my mom would say certain things to me about marriage and I would be like, oh my God, you gonna deal with that? Like, I had a totally different view. But then I had to really look historically of like where she was when she got married and how things were. Mm-hmm. And how things had really changed in the landscape of the world, and that some opportunities I had opportunity to do, she did not. So that changed kind of my way probably I approach relationships. But then in looking at her example, there's so much, so many nuggets I learned about how you can have a good relationship and how you can maintain, a monogamous relationship with someone and be married to someone, and how you have to be patient and just, different things that you take for granted until you're then in that situation. You're like, oh, that's what she was trying to tell me. So I think,
totally.
Yeah, like you're saying, there's value like on both sides of it,
Yeah. And I think from when they were able to see, that there is value for them also, like to get to know me better or to get to like bond again over these things that we've thought of as like
disconnected, but they're actually connected.
Exactly.
But you know what? And kudos to your parents. And let me tell you why I really just congratulate them. It's because when you approach them about, mom, dad, why didn't you like discuss these things with me? They were honest. And honestly, I really base the level of parenting on honesty. They didn't give you some long drawn out BS response. It was truthful. And I want to applaud them for that because me, myself being a parent, I want to have those same attributes. I like to think I have those same attributes. You know, my kids come to me 10 years from now, 10, 15. So dad, why? I try to cover all bases, but as parents, sometimes we miss certain bases. And I want to be one of those parents as well who would just be open. Hey, look, I dropped the ball. Or hey, I didn't know enough about it myself. Or hey, I was afraid to expose you to this. So again, kudos to your parents for that.
Yeah, agreed.
So we have so enjoyed having you on the show. This time like flew by.
I know.
I think the work you're doing is amazing. Keep it up. What are some future projects you're working on? And tell people how they can find you.
Yeah, thank you so much. So season 2 of the podcast is going to come out early next year, hopefully in February or March. So people can stay tuned for that. You can find Embodied, wherever you get your podcasts. That's probably the best way to stay engaged with what I'm doing. I still will be working at WNC and I'll be on the air throughout December hosting the State of Things at noon.
We love the State of Things, by the way.
Yes.
Listen to me there.
You got to tell us how you get the cool radio voice. Like everyone on NPR has like the coolest, most relaxing
voice. That is so true.
And it's like you tune in and you can't turn away.
Who is it from Robert Statio? I may be mispronouncing his name. There are a few others, and I've been a fan of NPR for years, and to the audience, they know I just pretty much sometimes come unfiltered.
Yeah,
as a black man, it's like I can recall years ago, like, what are you listening to? I'm listening to radio, NPR. Like, huh? You listen to? I said, yeah, that's why you're still in the box and I'm outside the box.
I like the fact that NPR is very just non-biased. You're telling the story and you let the listener come to their own conclusion. I think that's what it's like, a non-stressful way to get the news. You know what's going on, but you don't get all
I like how you said that, because it is, that's a good point. It's like you guys are telling a story. I don't care what segment is taking place throughout the day. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And that's what draws me, because I love the art of storytelling with truths, of course, involved. So, yeah. Kudos to NPR.
Yay!
And Anita Rowe. So, guys, go check out Anita Rowe. Listen to her Embodied podcast. She's also on Twitter, I know, under Anita Rowe. Do you have a Facebook and Instagram page, too?
I do. Yeah, both.
Okay. And so she's a great person to follow. Thank you again for being on the show. We're going to end it on that note. We're taking off. Please remember to subscribe to future episodes of the Bad Talks podcast. You can listen to us on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and many other platforms. And until next time, XOXO. Thanks again, Anita.
Thank you.